Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Real spoilers powered by ReviewSTL.com.
Warning, the following film discussion will ruin the ending of any movie you haven't seen. Example, Bruce Willis is dead at the end of The Sixth Sense. See how I ruined it for you? Just like that. Here are a few more.
Silent breed is people!
I am the father.
Get it?
TalkSTL.com, real spoilers. You've been warned.
Broadcasting from the lush but not lavish studios located in the basement of the O'Keefe Institute for Advanced Film Snarkitude, this is Real Spoilers, episode 234.
Have you been working out on that bike to get through that thing without a breath?
I have.
Yeah, that's pretty good. That's
which class have you taken last? What was your most recent spin class?
Bike.
Bike.
Excite bike?
Excite bike.
Is that one?
Paperboy?
Yeah.
Oh, man. Watch out. That dog's coming.
Last 5 minutes of E.T. Yeah.
You guys remember, speaking of Paperboy, you guys remember the Back to the Future game on NES? Please tell me you played that.
No, absolutely. I was 30 when that came out.
Yeah, I remember it.
Well, but so anyway, so the guys walk across the street with a glass pane. They've got like the old trope. Yeah, so you've got a guy, so Marty's hoverboarding, skateboarding, whatever, down the street, and these guys are walking back and forth with their glass pane, but they're like just bouncing back and forth. Like, what are you guys doing? That's not even real.
Just go to the house.
And then if you walk by a bumblebee chases you, like
it was not a good game. I mean, it was almost as bad as that Friday the 13th game.
Oh,
that game was bad. Yeah. And Jaws was bad too.
It's more fun than that. Yeah. But. So anyway, NES games, they're so fun.
I've talked about this. I aged out of video games.
You did, yeah.
It's like I was in that weird gap to where they didn't keep up with kids, and then by the time they got advanced enough, they were too difficult to get back into. Yeah. I'm like, nothing.
You're the joystick.
Nothing will ever top the Atari 2600 joystick. Nothing.
Except for the Nintendo controller.
No.
Well, it was great practice.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, that's how you do. If you wanted to freshen things up, you would play Atari left-handed.
That's right. Yeah. Left-handed. Feels like somebody else is doing it.
Yeah. If you played Q-Bert, you would have to turn it sideways.
Is that like in the game for real?
For real. Like if you played Q-Bert, because the joystick, you would hold it like up, down, right, left, right? And on Q-Bert, the way he jumps on
it's like 3D.
You would flip it, you would cock it on an angle so it would look like a diamond instead of a square.
Because he scales like diagonally uphill.
Right. And that's how you would work the joystick.
I never got that game.
If you played Q-Bert.
I never understood how to play that game. Ever.
So anyway, it is a special treat for you, a special Thanksgiving time treat.
Yes.
You've had your turkey, or you're having your turkey whenever we decide to finally post the episode.
Thanksgiving was great this year, guys. I got so full. The turkey was plump, juicy, delicious.
So if you're full up on turkey, how about a deep fried taco?
How about a deep fried
taco?
There's
always room for a deep fried taco.
How about a deep fried turkey taco?
Oh, how about that? Mm-hmm. Turkey tacos.
Yeah. Never had one, but I'm willing to give it a shot.
Look, man, you have so many leftovers. You can only eat a turkey sandwich so many times.
Turkey taco, turkey burrito, turkey and eggs.
You
got to
do
turkey.
Something else.
So unfortunately, we are down one. Let's go around the table and everyone can introduce themselves.
This is Joe.
This is Kevin.
And this is Tom. So we are down. We have a man down.
Man down.
He's
Blake's off. Not here today.
He's off. Yeah, Dan's out with Blake making salsa for the holidays.
Turkey salsa.
Turkey salsa. Yeah.
And
or is it like raspberry compote? What's this? Give me the
cranberry.
Cranberry. Yeah. I don't eat it. I don't eat it at Thanksgiving.
There's
so.
No part of that I like.
Yeah.
I don't like the canned stuff. I don't like the real stuff.
I don't do any cranberry. Sam. Cranberry salsa.
Yeah, I'm just meat and potatoes.
Right?
I know that shocks you.
Yeah.
It depends on who. Like, my grandmother makes stuffing from, like, White Castle
burgers. I don't want to eat her either.
Oh,
that's up to you.
Oh,
that's all. That's your call. I don't know. Well, Tom, whatever you want to do, it's
if
fine.
There's one thing we know about Tom, he is a salt of the earth, you know, country boy, grew up on a farm, you know, meat
killed
and
his own turkey.
Yeah.
With my bare hands.
Grew his own potatoes.
Yeah. Carrying sacks of grain.
Using his own poop.
That the Martian joke?
From the Martian.
Okay, no.
Oh, I see. So, I'm like, what?
That was a callback, damn it.
Yeah, that was
something.
So, real quick, shameless plug. Don't forget, we're available on iTunes where you can go and rate and review and subscribe. It helps us tremendously. We greatly appreciate it. So, nice. There. Got that out of the way. Oh, we're on Facebook. Facebook.com/RealSpoilers. You can go there. That's where you can share the show with your friends.
And you know you want
to. You know you want
to. And talk to us. Let us know what you like about the show. If you're a long-time listener, you know, what do you miss about the show? If there's any callbacks.
Are you dating the listeners?
long time.
Yeah, I think I'm at long time.
Not
but
long
either
term.
Way. I mean, this
they'll
is.
Love a, you long time.
Yeah. Come on now. But yeah, let us know what you think. And if there's any suggestions or something we should bring back, like a Paul Walker joke or, you know, anything you might miss. I'm sure Joe has them at the ready.
I'm ready to rock and roll.
If he gets them, you know, requested.
Yeah, I'll just, yeah.
So for new listeners that aren't familiar with a deep fried taco, Dan coined the phrase.
He did.
And it's basically something that's bad. You know it's bad. And you still enjoy it anyway. Now, we're not talking about campy movies or cult movies that you enjoy ironically.
Right.
Movies like the Monster Squad.
Like Monster Squad is so bad that you enjoy
it. Both of you.
Yeah, no, Monster Squad definitely counts. Because it's a bad movie. But
it's not a bad movie.
But he still enjoys it. So
we got more love for that
I
one.
You don't enjoy it ironically? I thought people know it's bad and they enjoy it just because it's ironic.
No.
No, it's supposed to be a movie that's bad, that people think that critics didn't like, the public didn't like, but you still enjoy it.
I didn't know anyone actually enjoyed it.
According to our Facebook wall, a bunch of people enjoyed it. Meh.
Thought it was like a Mystery Science Theater type thing where people just make fun of it and that's all they want.
No, it's not.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
It's not.
Okay. Nah.
So,
you learn something every day, right?
Yeah.
So that's what a deep fried taco is. So in the past, I know that deep fried tacos I picked Ishtar.
Yeah.
And,
oh, yeah, you did.
Adventures of Ford Fairlane. Neither of them are loved movies, but I enjoyed them. Not ironically, I straight up liked them.
I think I did Con Air.
Yeah.
And, I guess maybe Monster Squad.
I think you did because you
Monster
were just,
Squad was one.
You were just jonesing to talk about
it. I was. Nobody else to talk about it.
Yeah.
I chose
little did I know.
Yeah. Well, we don't know how to break it to you, but it was your make-a-wish. You,
oh, no.
You have feline AIDS and...
No. It's I don't know how I got it.
Yeah. Explains those scratch marks.
It does, yeah.
Yeah.
I believe I chose Hackers, and then what? Mortal Kombat was my second one.
That sounds right.
Yeah. I think that's what I chose.
So, so that is a deep fried taco. So we will talk about that this week.
Yeah.
All right.
So who would like to go first?
Not me. Oh, I'm me apparently. So, I'm a huge fan of The Crow. I think I love that property. I love the comic book. I love that that movie was my first introduction to
and
that character.
Almost every week you eat it.
Every single week.
Yes.
I am constantly eating crow.
I was always more of a servo guy. I don't know. What about you?
I like Cambot.
Oh, good call.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There would be no show without Cambot.
That's true. There wouldn't be a show.
You wouldn't see a thing.
No, it's all her.
You know
it's
what?
All because of her.
See?
Underappreciated.
I'm a thinker.
You are. Yep. Yeah. Good job. That was a Mystery Science Theater 3000 reference, in case anybody doesn't know that.
I would think the bulk of our fan base
would
connect the dots, but yeah.
So I realized that, you know, Brandon Lee passed away during the making of that movie, which in a scene that I thought that I... So for the longest time, I always thought it was that boardroom scene where he's standing on the table and he's going after the last guy from the gang. It's not.
It's the scene where he, like, comes home into the apartment,
it's the scene
right?
Where, yeah, that guy just passed away. The actor that shot him and killed him passed away.
He said that he never got over that.
I don't... How could you?
Oh, I know. And it's not like he obviously didn't mean to. It was a total accident. But, like, he is forever the guy that
he killed
the trigger.
Lee.
Yeah, and it just... it would
and it's
be
not
terrible.
Like he even loads the gun. Like,
no,
the,
right?
The
no,
prop master would hand him the gun.
No, but, like...
How
are
there even real bullets on a set?
See, I always thought that it was... that there was something that was...
Foul play? No.
I mean, that's always the story. Because
Chevy Chase?
Yeah.
And Goldie Hawn?
Yeah. It's because, like, his dad died kind of mysteriously. So I guess I always thought that there was a blockage in the barrel of the gun, and when that second bullet went, like the second,
oh, like it pushed it out. Pushed it wasn't out. A real.
Oh, I
and
see.
That's how it. Yeah, I don't think it was a real bullet.
Like a shrapnel, some kind of.
Yeah, like there was something else inside the barrel of that gun that came.
There was
out.
A guy in the '80s on a TV show. I think it was called Cover Up.
Okay,
and the premise of the show. Keep in mind, it was the '80s. Things were different, kids.
Yeah.
And the premise of the show was that they were like male models, but also spies.
So Charlie's Angels with dudes,
kind of.
Okay,
and are like detectives or something. Yeah.
Okay,
and
it's like the new Amazon pilot Jean-Claude Van Johnson.
Is that a thing?
That's the premise behind that.
Is he
show.
In it?
Jean-Claude Van Damme stars as Jean-Claude Van Damme, codename Jean-Claude Van Johnson. He's an actor in Hollywood named Jean-Claude Van Damme, who's a, you know, 80s action star, but he's really a secret agent.
Oh, my God.
And it's fantastic. He's so self-aware. That it's so well-written.
He has figured out a sort of way to revitalize his
career. Or to come back, yeah.
Yeah, like JCVD was really good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The show is funny, but it's also up against The Tick, which was funny. Uh-oh. And I want to see more of, so I think, I mean, I wish, in theory, I guess Amazon could greenlight more than one pilot, but the premise is you vote for one.
Are they the one with the Jeffrey Tambor show? Is that them?
Parenthood.
Is that what it's called?
Transparent.
Sorry.
Yeah. Parenthood's the other one.
They do have that, yeah. So I hope that the Jean-Claude Van Johnson and The Tick get greenlit. You know, hopefully there's enough behind both of them. But yeah, it's really good. That's Check it out if you haven't seen it.
I'll give it a look.
But the cover-up thing, I think that's what it was called. And it was a hit, and it wasn't tongue-in-cheek. Like, it was kind of, you know.
Oh, it was legit.
I mean, it was, I mean.
As legit as it could be.
As legit. I mean, it was kind of like a Magnum P.I.
Sure,
or something.
Sure.
And the star of the show was sitting there with a gun on set one day, and it had blanks.
Right.
And he was like, oh, no, they're blanks. Look.
Oh,
and it's
no.
like, but it still has a discharge. And he put it right against his temple. And dead. And
jeez.
Then they were like, perhaps we'll cease production on this show.
Oh,
and,
that's awful.
That's just so terrible. Yeah. I mean, a stupid thing to do, but like, I get, you know, I get that he was.
If you don't know anything about guns,
yeah,
I get
true.
Why you would think
exactly.
that.
I learned very early in my life where it's just like, don't do that.
But if,
like, but yeah. I had gun training. Like,
right.
I didn't.
But if nothing else, just from a hearing standpoint,
right.
they still
it's
make
loud.
A lot of noise.
Those
and
are
right
very loud.
Yeah,
head.
You wear earmuffs,
yes.
you know, when you ear protection,
it's,
when you.
You can say whatever you want.
Yeah. Yeah. You just shoot and say whatever you want. Doesn't matter who you voted for. You put those ear protection on and you just shoot and talk. And
all you got to do.
Yeah, no one can hear you.
So, you know, I fell in love with this, with The Crow, and then I tried to go back and find, like, other stuff.
Right.
Right? So, there was no IMDb back then. There was no, barely an internet.
Oh, yeah, you had to actually know things.
So, we had this book at Blockbuster that was, like, this giant movie catalog.
Oh, I used to have that.
And I had one of those, yeah.
Yeah, exactly you could go through by last name, and you could find anything that they were ever in.
I forgot about those until now, but yeah, it was a big,
it was
fat
a huge book.
I had a mini.
It was the IMDb. It was the
it
Internet
pretty much
Movie
was.
Data Book.
Yeah,
yeah
that's
right.
exactly what it was. The Internet Movie Data Book.
Yes.
So, I found this flick called Showdown in Little Tokyo from 1991. It stars Dolph Lundgren and Brandon Lee.
This is already good.
It is awful. I own it on DVD. I don't even care. I wish there was a Blu-ray on it. I would totally buy the
Are
Blu-ray.
Are you going to get the 4K?
I would totally buy the 4K.
Are you going to buy a new like $1,000 TV just to watch your 4K
Just to watch
Blu-ray?
Showdown in Little Tokyo.
It's so bad, the 4K is only 2,500K.
Yeah, exactly. So the movie pretty much is Dolph Lundgren grew up in Japan. So, you know, you have a Chinese or is he Japanese? No, Bruce Lee's Chinese. But you have
I have to interrupt you.
Yeah.
It's on Blu-ray.
Is it really?
For $16.99.
16? Well, I'll pay it.
Yeah. Hey, if any listeners would like to know what to get Joe for Kwanzaa this year.
Yeah, please.
Showdown and Little Tokyo.
Showdown
and
Little Tokyo on Blu-ray.
Are you going to be like one of those like low-level internet porn stars? You're going to start your own Amazon wish list.
I have an
and
Amazon
people,
wish list.
People can buy things
Isn't
off there
the
for
Isn't that the weirdest
you?
Thing? And then like they're like, oh, somebody bought me this. And I was like, somebody bought you that, huh?
Yeah.
I guess there's those people out there. You know, it's just like strippers. Like, no, she cares about me. It's like, really? I think she cares about your wallet. That's what I think she cares about.
I bought Joe items off his Amazon wish list before.
Have you?
Yeah. Comic books.
Oh, okay.
Remember? I think I got you The Dark Knight Returns or something.
Oh, possibly.
Remember?
Yeah.
Some kind of a collection.
I do. Like, I don't like what people are like.
See, that's why I made a point to marry a woman who makes more money than I do.
So did
I. Just to clarify, the second.
Right.
That way.
Oh. Just so we're aware.
Yeah, oh, this just, is yeah. current time.
Currently. Okay. That way I know she's not after for me for my money.
Number one was blowing through my money.
Yeah. And the neighbors. Not their money, just the neighbors.
Just the neighbors.
Yeah, so I don't have to worry about Crystal being after me for my money. It's just for my freakishly large penis.
Oh, yeah.
And looks. Yeah. But mostly,
my
look at me.
My low-hanging balls.
Yeah.
I've been trying to figure it out for a while now.
You got to be packing heat.
Yeah, makes sense.
It's true.
Yeah.
You don't have much of a choice.
No, it's that or nothing.
Yeah, although I'm dying alone.
All of us have attractive spouses. I think there may be something.
Wait, no, Kev, we have spouses.
Well,
you have a girlfriend.
Oh, come on.
No, they're at least engaged.
That's true. That's a good point. Yeah,
I mean,
fair enough. Fair enough.
He has a lease with an option to buy.
Oh, he gets that, be like, oh man, I gotta turn this one in.
Yeah. He's like, he's trying to figure out if she's gonna listen, how much of this he has to pull out.
We could say it.
Yeah.
We're fine. Just keep your mouth shut.
Yeah, you could just be like,
we got you.
They're such assholes, honey.
I can't believe they
said
that.
Like, you were laughing the whole time. What?
No. No, that was just polite. That was courtesy. I actually went to another episode where they had said something to make me laugh, and then I dubbed that laughter in just so the listeners would think that we were having a good time. Yeah. But, honey, I was
not laughing.
I was appalled. We actually paused. I was in tears.
Yeah. I had to leave the room.
I can't believe you guys. Go on.
Yeah, go on. Still one of the best Brian Spath jokes. We were talking about me and my buddy.
I could
buddy.
Stand to hear more.
He was like,
I'll never forget that. I could stand
that
to hear
was a
more.
Good.
So funny.
So, yeah, Dolph Lundgren plays this guy as cop in probably New York City. They don't say, but it's probably New York City.
Ontario.
Yeah, exactly.
In his New York
Vancouver,
City.
Vancouver. Where he, you know, he's he grew up in Japan, so he has like all this Japanese culture. But then you've also got Brandon Lee, who is legitimately Chinese, and they're just like, no, we'll use the big dumb white guy as our Chinese person.
We'll get Mickey Rooney from Breakfast at Tiffany's.
Right. So, yeah, they're working this case, and the case is pretty flimsy at best. But one of the things I take away
from
the
partners?
Movie. Yeah, they're
How
partners.
How did they become partners?
So Lundgren, they never say.
Okay.
The captain's like, you're partners now. And he's just like, I don't
okay,
want a
just
partner.
One
of
those.
And
Lee's
like, I don't want a partner.
Got
and
it.
So,
okay.
You know, oil and vinegar.
Yeah.
That should work.
Right. So one of the takeaways is.
The thing you got to remember is in the 80s, we didn't have HR departments.
No.
Like,
yeah.
They just didn't.
Go.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't want to hear your complaints. So there's a couple other characters in the movie. You've got the bad guy from Mortal Kombat.
Oh, Shao Kahn?
Yeah,
oh,
Shao Kahn.
Who's suddenly interested.
Hey.
But he's all like, he's the bad guy in every 80s kung fu like
Asian
slash
movie. Yeah.
Yeah. But then you've also got the second in command from Ninja Turtles 2. The guy
Tia Carrera's in this.
Tia Carrera gets naked in this. Like full frontal naked.
Whoa, she shows her little Tokyo.
She shows the whole shebang.
Now we see why there was a showdown.
That's right.
Showing.
More like a go down in little Tokyo.
She totally bangs Dolph Lundgren in this movie.
Showing.
Yeah, showing. But it's also, they've got like, when you see the actors, you're like, oh yeah, stereotypical Chinese bad guy. Of course. But one of the takeaways is like, so Dolph Lundgren, they obviously thought, was going to be the big star.
They were pushing that for,
oh,
I mean,
man.
He was
they wanted
Punisher.
Him. Yeah, he, you know, obviously Ivan Drago.
Never heard of it. He was
fire.
What?
He was Ivan Drago?
Ivan Drago.
Yeah, it was the fourth part in this really small, like, action franchise. Didn't really go anywhere.
And what was this franchise about?
So, you ever heard the story of the Bayonne Bleeder? You heard
no.
that story?
No.
Okay, so that's really who Rocky's based on.
Oh, okay.
Is the Bayonne Bleeder.
Okay.
Yeah, that's he's just, you know, he's a down on his luck boxer.
Oh, so kind of like that Barbara Streisand movie, The Main Event.
The Main Event, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
okay.
It was right around the same time.
Okay.
They realized they had to push that.
Sure.
And, you know, it was
that was such a juggernaut. I get that people were trying to jump on that bandwagon.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. So
I would crush you.
Especially when the sequel did so well, The Main Event 2, Yentl.
I would see that movie. Isn't that a weird story like about John Peters, where he was just like, he was Barbara Streisand's hairdresser. And then he became one of the most like powerful producers in Hollywood. And then Kevin Smith said, in Hollywood, you just fail upwards.
Yeah.
Like, there's no other way to describe
that.
Like in Washington. Yeah.
What a weird... Don't know what you're referring to.
I don't want to get political, but like the things that he's saying now I'm just like, did you just mess with all the Republicans to get their vote? And now you're actually, because like he's saying,
I'm pretty sure, and I said this to Tom off air the other day, I'm pretty sure he's a New York Democrat.
They say apparently he's a Dixiecrat, which means you are you're a Democrat, but you are against minorities.
Yeah.
That's what I've heard.
I don't know.
Really? You don't know what?
We're not going to get into it. But, well, illegal. Anything illegal, there's a reason it's called illegal, is because it's illegal.
Well, it's not just that he's offended, but
I hear what you're saying. But
you know what I mean? Like, Ivy, you got to follow the law. That's just, I mean.
I agree. But that's not what he's. Okay. So they were banking on Dolph Lundgren, and his action sequences, very slow. Like, he is moving very slow.
Like, he wants to make sure you enjoy every minute of it. Like, he's really trying to.
Does he punch the machine and it gives you a number of how strong he is in this?
Yeah, don't ever go to a deli with that guy.
Oh, no.
Break the machine.
But then Brandon Lee comes on the scene, and he is, as bad as this movie is, like, you can tell almost immediately that this dude's going to be a star.
That dude was going to be
He was going to be a mega star.
Yeah.
And his... You know, his dad filmed, like, he choreographed all his own fight scenes. And I have a feeling Brandon Lee, much like his dad, was like, no, I got this.
Yeah, let me show you how this
works. Let me show you how this works.
If you grow up watching
Demos. Well, I think he died pretty young.
Yeah.
Like, I think his sister was a baby.
I just mean watching his films and stuff.
Oh,
your
sure.
dad, like, I mean, if you grew up watching your father on film choreographing.
A toddler. He was really young when his dad died. Yeah.
But you know, he wasn't like, well, I'm never going to watch these videos. Like, I bet you he idolized his father like most people did that weren't related
to
him. You know, watching him on screen and just taking that in. And, you know, that's how he got to know his father, I'm sure, which is sad. But,
and to his
credit,
like, he didn't go the way of his dad. Like, I think he played in a Kung Fu movie, like the David Carradine Kung Fu. I think he played David Carradine's son.
In the show?
No. There was a made-for-TV
movie. They did
movie.
One of those reunion movies, I know. Oh,
and Brandon Lee was Carradine's kid.
Okay.
And then he did a flick called Rapid Fire, and he did Showdown in Little Tokyo, and then he did The Crow. Like, and then The Crow was the one that, I think that was like 93, 92.
That was
going
to be his
That
breakout.
Was it, and it was. Like, if he had lived, he was going to be, I think he may have been bigger than his dad, honestly.
I think he absolutely would have been.
Yeah, and
because
I don't mean that disparagingly.
Because he was gonna be in big Hollywood movies.
He was gonna break out.
Well,
it was gonna be just kung fu flicks.
Well, his dad also was dealing with probably a little bit of racism and stigmatism.
Yeah,
just a little bit. Because he wasn't like he was Kato, you know, and in China that was the Kato show. It was not the Green Hornet. It was called the Kato show. Where Brandon.
Brandon Lee was in Kung Fu the Movie, which was a made-for-TV movie in 1986.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then Rapid Fire?
I think that's how that plays
out. Showdown Little Tokyo.
He was in something called Uncredited in Crime Killer, and then Kung Fu, then Legacy of Rage.
Legacy of Rage is, I think it's dubbed.
Yeah. And
what about Laser Mission?
And then maybe it looks like, because he was in something called the CBS Summer Playhouse, which is code for this pilot isn't going to go to series.
Okay.
But he was playing Johnny Kane, who was the character he played in Kung Fu the TV Movie. So my guess is they were using Kung Fu the TV Movie to set up as basically a backdoor pilot to spin off a new Kung Fu series and actually cast an Asian actor. And then Brandon Lee would have been a great choice. And then it just didn't go to series.
He does not look Asian. That's the other thing. His mother was white and he's white. Like, he looks white.
Yeah.
But obviously his dad is probably the greatest martial artist of all time.
But Joe, have you seen Laser Mission?
I feel like I probably have.
I would just, I mean, I'm intrigued by the plot. 1989 Laser Mission. Mercenary Gold is sent from the CIA to seize the laser expert Braun in Cuba before the KGB catches him. A recently stolen giant diamond could be used together with Braun's knowledge to construct a laser cannon which could bring power over the whole world. Who will succeed, CIA or KGB? Or none of them.
Or the KG Beast.
Yeah.
There's like 9 MacGuffins in that description.
That's why I'm like, I'm intrigued by this. What is going on?
So, yeah. So, and that's the thing is, like, it's a shame. I wanted, you know, you lose an actor like that.
Yeah.
It's very early in his career.
What could have happened? You know,
what
like, how many
happened?
More movies
oh,
would
he,
we...
I mean, and I, also, as bad as this movie is, he's really good. Like, he gets it. Like, he understands there's a little bit of tongue-in-cheek. I'm pretty sure he's playing a gay character as well.
Right.
Because they don't... Dolph Lundgren obviously is hooking up with Tia Carrera, and Brandon Lee is not doing anything, and he makes a reference to the size of Lundgren's penis at one point in the movie.
I was going to say, is he gay, or is this... They had a tendency to not... And they still do. Like, you don't see Asian actors in a lot of romantic subplots.
Actually, there's a documentary called... oh, dang it. I think it's called I Am Bruce Lee, and yeah. Spike TV did it, but it's like they talk to all of like Dana White or Gina Carano and all of these, you know, MMA fighters and action stars, and they said the same thing. We're just like, they're not Asian sex symbols,
right?
Until him, like, yeah. When Bruce Lee shows up, people are just like, how you doing?
Yeah.
Yeah, but like they totally, I think that there was probably a script somewhere where he was gay, and they were just like, take it out.
Right.
Don't
That's
do that.
That's pretty edgy for back then.
Yeah, especially
and it would have been
80, 91.
And
90.
It would have been played for laughs. It wouldn't have...
Oh, yeah.
You know, it wouldn't have been a... You
I
know.
Think the line... I read this. The original line was, you've got the biggest penis on a white man I've ever seen. And they were like, take that white man part out.
Right, yeah.
And they were just like, oh, okay. And then he delivers the line like that. But yeah, so, you know, there's the Yakuza is involved because... What else have you got?
Yeah,
you know, and that they don't know what else to do. It's not a great movie at all. But if you're looking for to see Brandon Lee, that change where he's, you know, if you're looking for more of that stuff, check this out. It's obviously it's on DVD and Blu-ray that I will probably
clearly
go buy when I'm done here
on Blu-ray. Yeah. It obviously has a 4K restoration,
which it needs. Yeah. Yeah. But there you go. Showdown in Little Tokyo. I will say the budget was $8 million.
Whoa.
And it made two.
That is a large budget for back then.
A large
on that
budget
kind of movie.
For like 1991.
That's like a little action.
Yeah.
You know, Monster Squad had a $12 million budget.
It did. But that was the 90s, wasn't it?
That was like 87.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right.
But that had a lot of makeup. And
this one had Dolph Lundgren and Brandon Lee.
Is this pre or post Rocky?
It has to be post.
Yeah.
Isn't I mean, it? Dolph Lundgren, Rocky IV is the breakout. Like, that's where he shows up for the first time. So everything else after that is post.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Ooh, the Punisher.
Cool. Well, Kevin, you or me?
I'll go. You usually close it out, so we'll just keep the tradition. Well,
yeah,
so,
Tom's got one from 1912.
So I'm going to finally do...
I don't. I might. I probably. I bet you, without hearing yours, I bet you I have the newest movie in here.
Okay.
And I'm going to go out on a limb and say the most embarrassing.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, having listened to R2, I mean, I know what mine is. It's not, yeah, you have to by process of elimination. But I'm finally going to do this little movie justice that I think has been underappreciated. The criticism is undeserved. And I just want to read you some of the cast list. When you think of great actors, Dame Maggie Smith, right?
Should I know who that is?
Yeah.
Who is that?
Maggie Smith?
I'm
well,
asking.
She's in Harry Potter, the Harry Potter
movies.
Oh,
yeah, okay.
It's probably her most famous current, you know,
sure.
role.
Oh,
but I mean,
no.
She's been acting for forever. You have actors like Bob Hoskins, great actor.
Yeah, I know what this is.
Great actor. You know, Lover or Leaver, but Julia Roberts.
Yeah.
Right?
Is Dustin Hoffman in this movie?
Dustin Hoffman is in it? I mean, the star-studded cast just goes on and on and on. This one of the stars of the movie, Robin Williams.
Yeah.
I mean, hell of an actor. And the director, Steven Spielberg.
I've never heard of him.
So, I mean, when you have that cast...
He directed an episode of Columbo. It's probably
Is that right?
Yeah, that's...
Oh, the
guy
one with
did the
Fisher
one.
Stevens.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's Spielberg, the Columbo guy.
I gotcha.
So when you have a cast list like that and a director like Spielberg who just knocks it out of the park 11 out of 10 times, I mean, how could you go wrong, right? This is a little movie that I like to refer to, because it's the name of the movie, as 1991's Hook.
What the movie is called?
1991's
Hook?
Just so we're aware.
Yeah.
Interesting.
You could also refer to it as Hook, parenthesis 1991. You know, we have different names for it. But this movie is one that I grew up watching on VHS. I think Joe is in the same boat.
Absolutely.
I've gone back and watched it. You know, sometimes you go back and watch your movies, as we've done on this very show, and you watch them and you're like, this does not hold up.
I've never had that feeling.
About this movie, I've watched it multiple times in recent years. I remember the DVD of this was so rare. When DVDs came out, they did a very initial print of Hook, and it was an out of print, you know, and they were not making any more. I think for one Christmas, my mom found it on eBay, like, $40-$50 for a DVD, right?
Your mom spent $40 to $50 on one gift for you?
Well, I mean,
you're an only child.
Yeah,
aren't you?
Guess who's an only child? Yeah.
But you know, I mean, she knew that I would love that because I couldn't find it on DVD. It was totally out of print. It might have been 30, but you know, anyway, she did it on eBay. Now they sell it at Target for $5, right. And like the value thing, which is cool. Like, I'm glad it's available because you just literally, and this was before, you know, streaming and all that. So if you wanted to watch it, you had to find an out of print DVD. It absolutely, in my opinion, holds up. I'm not saying it's some Oscar worthy movie that should have won, you know, the gold that year. I'm not saying, but it's a children's film directed by Steven Spielberg telling the story of Peter Pan.
Was it directed by a child? Is that what you mean?
So I just,
you're outnumbered now, damn it.
Yeah, that's why I picked this. I was very strategic. But when you go back and you watch it and you see the filmmaking, you know, the cinematography, I mean, this is Steven Spielberg, who obviously is, you know, an incredible director, and this is, I won't say early in his career, but in the middle of his career.
Like,
I mean,
that point.
Yeah, exactly. So he's been directing for quite a bit of time.
What year did he start? What was his first flick?
His
76?
No, it would have been like 75. It was that Goldie Hawn car movie. It's like
Used Cars.
No, that's
Kurt Russell.
Yeah,
and well, he didn't direct it. That was, who directed that? It's like who directed Used Cars? It's a name director now. It's not Landis. It's
the other guy.
Do you need me to IMDb Spielberg real quick?
No, just do. Just look up Used Cars.
It was
Tom's got that.
Zemeckis.
There you go.
Oh, is that right?
Which I see those two kind of go hand in hand.
Yeah.
You think of producing and directing, right. Like those two. Obviously, Zemeckis is his right hand man.
Sure.
You know? You think of Back to the Future being a Spielberg movie, and that's directed by Zemeckis. So, if you watch the movie, I mean, from the very beginning, just from the way it starts and the tone of the film, it's set in like what would be present day America. They start off in the States, and this guy Peter, his wife and his young daughter are watching a play, and his kids are in the play, and one of them plays Wendy. So, you know, it's the story of Peter Pan that we know in this play, at least, and we'll come to find out is also in the movie. And you know, just the way it starts out with the tone of it and the parents watching the play and everything, like, it doesn't start off like a goofy, silly kids movie. Like, it's not zany, it's not it's not one of those kids movies. It's a very, I don't want to say adult, but I mean, it's taken seriously. The way it's made is
when you get into the meat of what the story is about.
Oh, and definitely the subject matter, and I'll get into that. But I mean, just the way that it's filmed, you know, it doesn't start off with like fun, like zany music or whatever. I mean, it's filmed like a legit, I mean, this is Spielberg, just like he films, you know, Jurassic Park. I mean, as far as the tone and filming a movie.
No dinosaurs, though.
No dinosaurs, unfortunately. But anyway, so what happens is they end up going to visit Wendy.
They visit.
Oh, they like to get a Frosty?
Yeah, right, exactly.
Who doesn't, really?
But
they visit Wendy's mom. Because they go to London, right? Like, they go to London to visit.
No, he doesn't marry Wendy.
Yeah, but he marries.
Well,
spoilers, he marries Wendy's daughter.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
So we'll come to find out. So his name, Robin Williams, plays Peter Panning. You know, and so obviously, you know, he's going to be Peter Pan. And if you ever saw a trailer, I mean, you know what's going to happen. But
I feel like they didn't
trick you.
No,
right, they didn't. Wait, this is a Peter Pan.
Yeah, right. Exactly. So
his name is going to be all about Jeff and Skippy.
So I like, you know, but it's interesting.
Jeff, not Jeff.
I said it wrong.
But it's a really interesting spin on the story. So when you see a movie like Pan, which was not very good, and that's an origin story.
What was the one that we did? Do we do Pan?
Pan.
That's the one with Hugh Jackman?
Yeah.
I think so. And then there's a Peter Pan that wasn't good either.
And that Pan movie was awful.
So you see these movies that are like origin stories, or they tell, you know, a different take on the traditional Peter Pan story, and, you know, what we saw in Disney, which is the most famous.
It's like an Elseworlds, kind of.
Yeah.
And to use comic book terms, it's like an Elseworlds Peter Pan story.
Yeah, but what this one really does, which is neat, is that it doesn't tell the origin story. It's not like him growing up as a kid and this is Peter Pan.
Don't you get hints of it?
But you get, it's the future. It's like, why do we have this guy in the real world? You know, Peter Pan lives in Neverland, and he stays there. He doesn't leave it. And in this movie, you start off with Peter Panning, who, you know, is Peter Pan. And the question is, what is he doing? Why is he not in Neverland? Why is he grown up?
Why is he an adult?
And in Neverland, you never grow up, right? So Peter Pan is aged, and you're just like,
he's
what is
fat.
Going on? Yeah, well, they do say it. No, their words, not ours, you know? You know, old fat guy, whatever, you know, but
can't even see your toes.
Yeah. So
when was the last time you looked at those?
So, you know, you start off with, it's a different take on it, which is really neat. It's a fresh take on a Peter Pan story. But what we end up getting to is that they go to see his wife's mother, so Grandma Wendy, to the kids. And the kids with a daughter that's in the play is like, Grandma, I got to play you in the play. It's a play about Peter Pan. And, you know, the kids are like, you know, basically alluding to
isn't
that
the
Wendy.
Wasn't the daughter in, like, Matilda?
I don't think it's that girl. Maybe.
I think it is that girl.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so, you know, she's like, oh, Grandma, we get to play you in the I was you in the play, and the audience would think to themselves, oh, well, that's cute. Like, of course, that's not really Wendy from the story, but her name's Wendy. That's cute. They tell the story or whatever.
Right.
But what we come to find out is that is Wendy.
It is Wendy.
That is the Wendy from the Peter Pan story that we all know. And so basically what happened is Peter Pan left Neverland, and he...
Well, he kept coming back to see Wendy, and then one day he came back and Wendy was all grown up. And then he was just like, what the hell happened?
Right.
Like,
well,
why are you old?
Well, yeah, because Wendy left Neverland, and then while he stayed there, she aged, and then he ended up going to visit her as she was older and fell in love with her daughter. So, but I mean, that's spoiler alert. It unravels, but we don't have time to obviously step by step the movie. But that's the relationship here, is that, you know, that is the real Wendy. So one day, one of the uncle or something, Wendy's brother, that's Toodles? Is that? Remember who loses his marbles, the old guy?
Was that her brother? Wasn't her brother? Her brother was a John boy and...
Oh, that's true.
Well,
that. Right. Like, okay, brother, so it's not her brother.
Yeah, the original story was like...
Just one
Wendy
of the lost boys.
Yeah, one of the lost boys.
Anyway, but it's Toodles, I think is his name.
Yeah.
He loses his marbles. So anyway, but the kids are like with him and they go to bed. So like they're supposed to be safe in bed. And what ended up happening is Hook actually comes and kidnaps the kids. The latch of the bedroom is this creepy Captain Hook hand, which is like...
It's like, why would you do that?
Yeah, why would you do that? If you're from Neverland and he's your enemy and whatever, like that whole thing, like, why did you make the bedroom latch look like a hook? It looked cool, but like...
Why do Christians wear crosses?
That's true.
It's true.
That's a good point.
Yeah,
never forget Captain Hook. But but so he comes... So he comes in and he kidnaps the kids, and Peter and his wife are out, and they have this terrible feeling, and they get home and they see that the kids are gone, and I think Grandma Wendy says they're gone, you know, they took him. And so Peter is forced to go back to Neverland.
Does
and
Tinkerbell
get his
come
kids.
And get him? Is that how he gets back? Because he can't fly.
Yeah, I think that's how she comes back and
can we
says,
talk about how bad Tinkerbell wants to bone Peter Pan in this movie?
Oh yeah, she's got
like,
the hots for
thing
sure.
Where,
I'm not even sure the logistics
right.
of something like
she's
that.
Pretty small.
Oh, you know who plays young Wendy?
Who?
Gwyneth Paltrow.
There you go.
Yeah, I knew there was somebody who
was...
Yeah,
wow,
yeah.
Okay.
Like Peter shows up and it's Gwyneth Paltrow.
Yeah.
And I was just like, oh, hello.
Yeah. So...
I would stay too.
Yeah. So anyway, Tinkerbell does show up and she goes, you got to go fight him or whatever. And Peter's just like, what the hell is this? Like, I am not Peter Pan. I'm Peter Panning. I'm an accountant or, you know, what he just...
Right.
He's totally against it. And what happens is he has forgotten his childhood. He doesn't remember. He honestly doesn't think he's Peter Pan from the stories. He's, you know,
The longer he's away from Neverland, he forgets everything about Neverland.
Yeah, and so basically he goes on an adventure.
How I feel about this movie.
So he basically goes on an adventure to get his kids back, and like meanwhile Captain Hook and Smee, played by Bob Hoskins,
he's one of the best parts of this movie.
Like, oh, absolutely.
Bob Hoskins and Smee is hilarious.
But Dustin Hoffman is hamming it up for sure, chewing the scenery. But again, it's a fun fantasy kids
there's
movie.
Also,
like, I think it's good.
There's a weird thing going on, like where...
Oh, that they're gay?
Yeah.
Yeah.
A, they're gay.
I think it's
not subtle.
To. Yeah.
It's not alluded to. Yeah. They pretty much tell you. Yeah. They're fighting like an old married couple.
Yeah.
But also, Captain Hook is aging.
Yeah.
Because like he has like the traditional
black
Disney
curly
style.
Wig.
Yeah. But he takes it off.
Yeah.
And he's got like no hair. And it's this weird scene where he's like
the Anakin Skywalker.
Exactly.
Cat of pirates.
Yeah, exactly. And I just always found that very, like, how is he aging?
He must, like, I mean, now he went to kidnap the kids. Maybe he goes and does stuff outside in Neverland.
But he has a wig. So he I see. So
I mean, he maybe ages because
he's
been trying to do stuff.
Okay.
You know, That's my take on it, at least.
They've also caught the croc.
Yeah.
They have the croc, and it's the biggest croc. Like, it's ridiculous.
This whole movie's a croc.
Hey,
Hey, 2-1. But, so anyway, I mean, that's really, I'm not going to go into the whole plot by plot thing, but.
Run home, Jack.
Yeah, Captain Hook is trying to court the kids into being his kids, and he basically says, your dad doesn't care about you. There's a whole subplot of him not Peter Panning going to work instead of showing up to his baseball game that he promises he'll be there. He said,
and
my word is my bond, and then he just doesn't show up again.
And Hook is definitely playing like the, I'll be here, I'll be your dad.
And Hook even puts on a baseball game with the Pirates playing baseball with him. But like, it's a very fun-loving movie.
Until they kill Rufio.
Well, I mean, he's asking for it.
I feel like that's a phrase that shouldn't be said.
No. No, but it's a very fun, loving movie. There's a lot of fun scenes, like with the baseball thing, and then the food scene, which is probably one of the most memorable, where they're using their imaginations, and that's how they don't have food, and Peter Pan's like, what the hell is this? How are we going to eat? And they use their imaginations in that big food fight. It's just a big set piece with all these actors. But I think it's a really enjoyable movie. I don't think it's supposed to be like one of these Oscar-winning worthy films, but for a kids' movie, Spielberg directed, the acting, as hammy as it might be, like, I feel like it fits for the tone, you know, like, not the serious parts, but like the laughter and the jokes and all that.
Oh,
I think it
this
fits.
This was like, this was a state, like a VHS staple.
Yeah.
In the rounds.
Yeah.
And I know that Tom and Dan, I think you guys aged, and I don't mean that, I just think it aged out.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Probably if you were our age.
Yeah, because I remember seeing it just like, I remember being excited about it. I liked the premise of the movie. I liked everybody involved in the movie. Yeah.
Didn't you like about it? Like, what is it about it that, like,
it just
sticks in your craw?
I just remember being really kind of dry and boring.
Okay.
Really? And it didn't have a sense of wonder to me.
Huh. I can see that. I get that. Yeah.
I love like you saying Elseworlds take. I love the idea that it's not just like, hey, let's take the Peter Pan or the Mary Martin.
Yeah.
Or like,
I like that part.
Like the fact that he's old and left and he has a family and go back. Like, it's just a really neat time. What I do want to do is, so you guys may
not going to sing, are you?
I'm never going to grow
up. What year was this?
1991.
And what year was Pretty Woman? 1989 Julia Roberts was like at the was she at the height of Julia Roberts?
Oh yeah,
was
once it like, Pretty Woman hit, she was a star.
Because she is, the story goes that she was I think they called her Tinker Bitch on set.
Surprised me.
She was the most trouble to deal with and get to act like. She was like, I'll put this in terms you understand. And I mean this in a really good way.
Oh, I was going to a wrestling reference.
Bruce Willis in Cop Out.
Oh, well.
She didn't want to be there. She didn't think what they were doing.
Then why the fuck are you signed
up? Right. I know
role.
That's what I'm saying. So she was just disinterested and whatever. So, but what I would do, have you guys heard of a reviewer named Roger Ebert?
I believe I've heard of this guy.
No.
Okay. So he
he's
was
dead now, right?
Rest in peace. Let's, you know. But
famous. He trashed all the Friday the 13th movies, so.
Oh, I see. He's
him and every other critic in America. Yeah.
He's a famous reviewer, and so, like, I wanted to go back and see, like, what did, you know, famous reviewers have a problem with? And he gave it 2 out of 4 stars, so it's not like it was zero, but, like, why did he think it was only a 2-star movie? So this is what, like, at the time, the top critic in the country thought.
In all fairness, I think those guys were probably the top critics. Up until they died.
Yeah.
I can't really think. You know what I mean? Like,
I mean, like, this
Gene
is the guy.
Shalit, Leonard Maltin, and those guys.
Yeah, but this was the guy. So, like, I'm like, what was his problem? And so he says, the ads for Steven Spielberg's Hook asked the question, what if Peter Pan grew up? But the answer, alas, is that when he would probably star in a lugubrious?
Lugubrious.
Didn't even know that word. Thank you for, you know. Lugubrious retread of a once magical idea, a movie very much like this one in which Peter Panning, he says Peter Banning, but I thought it was Panning, is a busy executive with more time for his cellular phone than for his children until fate
launches
him. Also,
cell phone that looks like a brick.
That's, it's not that. It's not the brick one. It's a
not?
Flip phone. It's like a little black flip phone. It's big, but flip.
Man, okay.
Yeah.
I feel like the Zach Morris phone.
No. Until fate launches him back onto combat. So this is what he has to say about it. Robin Williams plays the harassed businessman, and Maggie Smith is the old granny. She's supposed to be 95 in this, and this is 1991. She looks exactly like she looks now. The way they aged her, like, it's like when they do that when younger actors age up,
right.
You see them 30 years later. It's just funny because it's like, well, that's her today. She hasn't aged. The old granny, who's able to suggest the most wonderful abilities when she whispers, Peter, dear, don't you know who you are? Actually, he can't remember a thing that happened before he was 12, but Hook can and kidnaps his 2 children because he wants to lure Peter back to Neverland for a rematch. The sad thing about the screenplay for Hook is that it's also correctly titled. This whole construction is really nothing more than a hook on which to hang a new version of Peter Pan's story. No effort is made to involve Peter's magic in the changed world he now inhabits, and little thought has been given to Captain Hook's extraordinary persistence in wanting to revisit the events of the past. The opening of the film promises more. Spielberg sets the tone in modern-day America, where the executive lifestyle leaves no time for fathers to spend with their children. So, like, this is the bigger story arc. Like, the subject matter that Joe and I were talking about is, like, you know, spending time with your kids
I think what he was trying to say is that at its heart, it's about Peter and his kids.
For sure,
I think I remember the complaint being that it was just kind of maudlin.
Yeah,
it was like some of that, like, for sure.
You know,
I can
like
see
a,
that.
And I mean, a lot of kids' movies do that, and then, you know, I mean, Up.
Sure,
you know, but it never really fully kind of rebounded from just its overarching sense.
Well,
of
because
sadness.
I mean, it comes down to Peter and Hook.
Yeah.
Like, that's what it comes down to, and then he has the revelation, and he loves his kids, and it's just like, oh, we're okay now.
Yeah.
Except for the 10 years of neglect that you have.
Right. Right? Yeah.
This
well, kids are
back.
Resilient. They bounce back.
That's true.
And he says
you
that,
know.
That's what the therapist keeps telling us anyway.
And he says that Robin takes his wife and children back to London to visit Wendy, who adopted them. And as the kids sleep in the very same bedroom where the original story began, we get the Spielberg visual trademark of blinding light on the other side of the rattling window, the promise of magic just outside. The other key characters of play, Hook played by Dustin Hoffman, if he were doing an imitation instead of a performance, which I disagree. I think it was fun for what it was.
He is doing a version of the Disney Hook, but I don't, like, we've seen other versions of Hook, and they're not good.
Yeah.
Like, that Disney version of Hook is the version
that's the go-to. I feel like for being a real-life, fun adventure kids movie, like, I feel like it worked, you know? Tinkerbell played by Julia Roberts, more as a duty than pleasure. There's not much wit here.
You said duty.
Yeah, I did. What exists is supplied by Robin Williams, of course.
Right.
And who does the best he can to be amazed and enchanted by shabby surroundings, and by Smee, who is sort of Hook's official sidekick. So, you know, he talks...
And Smee was great. Like, I don't think he gives him a benefit. He was very funny.
Yeah, he was. They talk about the orphans in Neverland, and they say that...
Are we talking about the movie or Michael Jackson's Ranch?
Yeah. He said that the large group of orphans who are masked up as if group photographs shunted here, and they're waiting for an audition for Oliver. In the end, he says the critical failure of Hook is its inability to reimagine the material, which I don't think is true, to find something new, fresh, or urgent to do with the Peter Pan myth. Lacking that, Spielberg should simply have remade the original story, you know, straight. So I don't know. I think that that would have been a mistake. I think what makes the movie is how unique it is, how it tells a different story, a different timeline. And I just think for a kid's movie doing what it was trying to do, I think it exceeded, and obviously for people of the generation,
I think if you're in that generation, you dig it.
Yeah.
If you're outside of that generation, you hate it.
But it was made for kids in 1991.
It's definitely a kids movie, and it's, you know, I think it's just the beginning of the Robin Williams kid version of Robin Williams, where it's like Flubber.
He's
and
old. Yeah, maybe.
I mean, like,
no, he hit that period where it was like, yeah,
he was the Rock.
Yeah.
Or Tim, you know, like, he's doing all of the kid,
sure,
the kid movies.
Yeah,
I guess.
But he always,
like,
went back and forth. But yeah, he did have a stretch.
Once he got away from, like, the rated R stuff, he never went back.
Not
rated R comedies.
Like, he would do indie stuff.
Right.
He would do the art house stuff. But
like, yeah. But he never went back to, like, because that man. I remember listening to, is it Robin Williams at the Met?
Yeah, Live at the Met.
Man.
That's crazy,
like,
isn't it?
It is so funny.
Yeah.
But he never went back to that.
Yeah. It's like watching Bob Saget when you're a fan of Full House growing up, and then you see his comedy.
Was everybody
a
fan of Full House, or was it just on?
Well, that's theoretical.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah. Okay.
It's that generation's Brady Bunch.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah. They won't be... Well, I guess they did bring back the Brady Bunch
they
twice.
They brought the back.
Well, I mean, like,
show.
For us, like, they had the movies.
No, they brought... you're going to go down the Brady Bunch rabbit hole with me? Okay, so they brought it back as the Brady Bunch Variety Hour.
And that was all the same people?
They had everybody back except... they had a different Jan.
Okay.
And then... Right? Or was it a different Marsha on that one? I think they had a different Jan.
I think it was Marsha.
And then, they brought it back as... as they did a Brady Bunch reunion movie, and then it was like basically a backdoor pilot to launch a sitcom called The Brady Brides. And that was Jan and Marsha get married, not to each other. That's some fan fiction I wrote, though.
Right,
if you're interested, I can direct you to that. But
would that be hosted on DirtyPirateHookers.com?
It would be hosted on DirtyPirateHookers.com.
Okay.
Yeah. And then that was like a... So then there was actually a sitcom that lasted like 6 or 8 episodes called The Brady Bards, and Jan and Marsha got married to people simultaneously, and it was kind of like a newlywed version of The Odd Couple, because, like, Jan marries this kind of freewheeling guy who's like an advertising guy for like a toy company, and then the other guy's like a button-up accountant, but then they share a house, and
it would be funny if they flipped those,
and hilarity would ensue.
Or at least it was supposed to.
Yeah, and then they did The Very Brady Christmas,
remember that one,
and then that launched yet another attempt at a revival show called The Bradys, and then that was like an hour-long show like kind of a dramedy where and what I always found fascinating is that they always kept their storyline. So like a lot of times they never denied the fact they never really acknowledged the variety show, but it was a variety show. But they but like the guys that the Jan and Marsha married, they stayed in the show throughout the whole time.
Did the weird cousin keep coming back?
Yeah,
you never saw Cousin Oliver.
Robbie Wrist. You never saw Cousin Oliver again. No. So.
And then they rebooted the movie.
They had the two movies,
and then they did the like. Yeah. But those were like tongue in cheek.
Those were, but silly, Gary Cole as the dad.
Yeah, he crushed.
Was it Christine?
Ben Stiller's
wife was Marsha.
Yeah,
and she was great.
Yeah,
but yeah, that was It's just a. I didn't realize that they kept kind of bounced that around.
They did that a lot. Yeah, they brought that. They went back to that well frequently. So,
so that's my pick.
Well, thank you, Kevin. So I guess we'll dig into my embarrassing
movie.
Let's
hear this one.
So I can't wait for this.
This is a universally reviled movie. Like even the people who it's the target demo for rejected this film.
Oh, and if this is an Adam Sandler Netflix movie,
it is not.
I'm moving to Canada.
Yeah, no, it is not. But I saw it and I actually enjoyed it and I was really surprised at all the hate it got. But it and the hate has stuck. It has never caught on as a cult film or anything. But I enjoyed. Year One, starring Michael Cera and Jack Black.
That movie's so bad.
It's really bad.
And, you know, I think what I liked about it is...
You ain't kidding, man. Let's leave some bounds older than or newer than me and Kevin's.
Yeah. Totally. And it's way worse.
Yeah.
I know that. And I think what I liked about this movie is, and it's weird, and I get why people didn't like it, because it's big comedy stuff. It all fails.
It's like old school comedy.
And that's what resonated for me. It really reminds me of like those old Bob Hope movies. Like
is this a Zemeckis movie?
No, this was Harold Ramis' last film. And he wrote it or was a prime. He's listed as the first of three writers on it and he directed it. So, I mean, you know, and
I was so disappointed in theaters seeing it because I'm like Harold Ramis and I'm like, I like Michael Cera at the time and Jack Black is, you know, usually pretty
Jack
funny.
Black was on fire.
So,
at that point,
and so was Michael Cera.
Off super bad.
Yeah. I mean, everything about this movie should have worked.
Yeah.
And I mean, I think it might have even been coming off after Juno.
Probably.
You know, so on paper, this movie should have been amazing.
Sure.
And what I like about those old movies, they had this character that you used to see all the time. It was like a character type called like the brave coward, right? You'd have
You
know, Bob Hope would do it all the time. Woody Allen did it a lot. And Woody Allen was a huge Bob Hope fan. And like once you kind of get that, you can totally see how often Woody Allen kind of rips off Bob Hope. But it was always this guy who was like pretending to be brave or forced to be brave when he really wasn't. And he would talk a good game and then end up chickening out, but somehow still end up saving the day. And you would see this a lot in films. And it kind of went away, I think, in the 70s. I think it really, like, the SNL crew, like, killed it.
Interesting.
I think it was Animal House is when it flipped.
And they became, like, the cool guys?
And it became, like, the cocky outsider. And it was all, you know, slobs versus snobs.
Stripes is the same way.
Yeah, like, it's all like that, right? Like, you know, Bill Murray is in complete control of the situation, even if he's the underdog, even if he's the outsider, even if he has to deal with somebody, whether it's, you know, Nicholas from the EPA or the...
Yes, it's true. This man has a...
Yeah, the induction officer in Stripes or his drill sergeant in Stripes.
His snarkitude,
right,
if you will, always gives him that leg up.
Correct.
Everybody all the time.
And that's not the kind of the primary character that comedy used to revolve around. And I think that's why sometimes people, like kids today, have trouble with older comedies is because it's such an...
The formula is different now?
Yeah, and it just doesn't resonate with them because they're like, this is weird and, you know...
He's being a bully.
Right. And so, like, I think that's what I liked about this movie. And I like the little asides. For me, the laughs were all like in the little things that were being said, and I like the notion of like these guys are like modern day. They have this modern day sensibility, and everything around them kind of appalls them.
I always thought of this as like History of the World.
Yeah.
Like,
oh yeah, it's very similar to that.
Really
like
double feature.
But there's a part where Michael Cera is like he's into this girl and she's a gatherer, but they only want to be with hunters, and he's a gatherer. And, you know, which is weird.
Is it Olivia Wilde?
No.
She's in this, though.
Oh, is she? Okay.
Yeah.
But it's weird for a man to be a gatherer. And he's like, oh, she's a self hating gatherer. Like, she doesn't want to be with other gatherers. And it's like all the little things. It's like the big things almost universally fail in this movie, but it's like the little, or like when he's meeting a slave, they get abducted and they're made to be slaves, and he's talking to another slave and he's like, I'm not a slave, I'm a volunteer. And
that's a testament to Harold. Like, I always felt like Harold Ramis would kill that little stuff. Like, when he goes small, that dude is unstoppable.
Right.
And then when he would get a little bigger, it would kind of fall apart. But man, when he would do that little stuff,
so much of what you love about Stripes and Ghostbusters, it is like, it's these little gems that you find hidden among the big stuff. And I don't even think it's his. No, maybe it is his line in Stripes when he's like, are either you two homosexual? And he's like, no, but we are willing to learn.
Yes,
and it's like it would be so easy to turn that into a big joke, and it becomes a bigger joke because he makes a little joke. And another example, and this isn't from kind of totally different movies, totally different type of thing, but like Gone with the Wind, right? The most famous line in the movie.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn.
Yep.
And when people like kind of recreate that scene for you, there's this big, huge, dramatic pause.
Gravitas.
Yeah, and if you watch the scene in the actual movie, when she's like, what am I, you know, where am I going to go? What am I going to do? He doesn't miss a beat. He's like, frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn.
Yeah.
And it's so soul crushing because there is no pause. Like, there's not like, he's not like, here's a zinger. He's just like, bitch, I don't care. Yeah,
whatever, dude. Like, whatever you want to do, man.
You're not even on my radar. And we don't even have radar.
You're not even on my level.
It's whatever the Civil War equivalent of radar would be. You're not on it. Like, but it's so dismissive. Like,
I want to see that part of it.
I love the anachronistic. I love the anachronistic. This is like Romeo and Juliet, you know, but for Casablanca. I want to hear the
Casablanca.
You know, it would be so easy to like really want to like,
especially with that actor.
Yeah,
yeah.
But anyway, so like I think that's what I liked about this movie. It reminds me, there's a Woody Allen movie which is tremendous, and I think a lot of people tend to skip it because they think it's not going to be funny and they think it's going to be like just weird and dry and they won't get the jokes because it's a parody of Russian novels. But there's a Woody Allen movie called Love and Death.
Yeah.
And you don't have to have read a Russian novel to enjoy that movie any more than you need to have seen Airport 77 to enjoy Airplane. And it's like, it's just line after line is just this just brilliant.
Where did he go off the rails for you? Out of curiosity, what do you have?
I wouldn't say
start dating his daughter.
Yeah,
no. That's problematic.
Adopted daughter, but
he never adopted her.
That's just
okay. He never adopted her. It's still weird, but he never adopted her. Just in the sense of fairness. Woody Allen takes this shift where he stopped really doing comedies.
Oh,
you know, and so there's always this debate among Woody Allen fans: is Annie Hall his first drama or his last comedy? Right.
It's tough.
And because it works on both levels, sure. Right? And so and then after that he started to get a lot more serious. And even when he tries to get back into funny stuff, it's not that old school Woody Allen where it's lots of one liners, lots of weird non sequiturs, lots of just kind of off the wall ideas. It's a lot more grounded.
Sure.
And so Annie Hall is kind of that. It still had that stuff, but it was also grounded because it was telling a very real personal story.
Right.
And so oddly enough, I think you almost have to point to Annie Hall, even though it's, I think, inarguably his best movie.
Interesting.
It's that's kind of the dividing line between old and new Woody Allen.
Okay.
So it was funny. I made my son watch Take the Money and Run.
It's a good flick.
And he had, he'd never seen it. I'm like, we're gonna watch this Woody Allen movie, and he's just like, oh.
And
I'm like, you just need to trust me. I'm like, when I've said sit down and watch this movie, how often have I been wrong? And he's like, never. I'm like, then shut your pie hole. Quit acting like your mother. And watch.
No, seriously, keep your mouth shut.
Yeah, and he loved it. Like, he's going to school the next day. He's like, guys, you've got to see this movie. Like, it's so funny.
That's like, so cool. Like, yeah, that is a cool
one. Because I'm like, and it's so kind of like. Even it's so like out of time, like it's not, you know, like that it's there really isn't anything topical except its general conceit of like
the way
this,
it looks probably
of this mockumentary, and like the guy who does the voiceover stuff was the guy who did all that voiceover stuff back then. So like in real time,
is that guy still alive?
No, he died.
I don't think he could be, but like in real time, that movie felt very Like,
that's funny.
It was just funny to hear some, like, playing it so straight.
Sure.
And this is pre-Airplane. Like, he really, he did that, like, play it straight, that will make it funny. But anyway, but yeah, I enjoyed Year One. It's not a great movie by any stretch of the imagination.
Listen to this cast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you've got, obviously, Jack Black and Michael Cera. Oliver Platt, who I also think is underratedly funny.
Yeah.
I think he's very funny. David Cross.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Paul Rudd.
Paul Rudd. Hank Azaria. Vinnie Jones. Christopher Mintz-Plasse.
Yeah.
Olivia Wilde. Horatio Sanz. Harold Ramis, obviously. And then Bill Hader is in it as well.
Yeah.
And it's just like, what is happening with this
cast
movie?
Of comedians.
Yeah. It's very, that's funny.
Yeah. And I'm sure a lot of people took the job because they wanted to,
it's a Harold Ramis movie.
They wanted to work with
Sure.
Ramis. But yeah, like I said, it's a sloppy movie, and it gets weird because it's like, it's supposed to take place in biblical times, and then suddenly they're cavemen. Yeah, like, right. There's a lot of stuff that just doesn't make sense, and there are clearly scenes that they just didn't know how to end. So I remember there's one where they're fighting a snake, and then you don't even see if they win or lose the battle. It's just, and they just cut to the next scene, and there's no mention of the snake ever again. I'm like, what are we doing? But that's not why you watch a movie like
no.
this. So right. anyway, so,
wow, good pull.
So
yeah,
that is mine.
You ain't kidding.
Yeah.
That is
a, so anyway, there's your Thanksgiving deep fried taco.
Yeah,
you are welcome.
Deep fried turkey taco.
Yeah. So I guess let's go around the table and everybody can say where to find them.
This is Joe. You can follow me on Twitter at the Twitter at Joey Butts BUTTS21.
This is Kevin. Follow me on Twitter at Kevin R. Brackett.
And this is Tom. You can follow me on Twitter at Roger Kubert or on Facebook at facebook.com/Tom O'Keefe. If you would like to continue the conversation online, chime in with one of your own deep fried tacos.
I want to hear some deep fried tacos from you guys out there.
Or mock us for one of ours.
Or mock us for ours.
I think
well,
we
you
are...
can't for me and Joe, but.
Oh, you can absolutely do it for mine.
Yeah. We are ripe for the mocking.
Yes.
You can find us at facebook.com/realspoilers or on Twitter at Real Spoilers.
Oh, you know what? Dan wrote in. I forgot. He mentioned that his deep fried taco was the Monster Squad. So I just wanted to make sure you put that out there. So.
You can't recycle deep fried tacos, Dan. Sorry. No. But thank you for trying. We appreciate you.
I did get a message this morning where he was like, you know, you can't do Monster Squad again.
Like, damn it. Son of a. Don't forget, we're available on iTunes. Go there, rate, review, subscribe. It helps us tremendously, and we greatly appreciate it. So that's it for this episode. I don't know what we're doing next week.
Wow. Yeah, I have no clue.
Because we're recording. We recorded this in August.
Yeah.
So we have no idea.
We put this in the can.
Yeah.
I know is that Star Wars is in a month. So
yeah. It's right around the corner.
We'll probably do that one.
I think it's a safe bet.
So
I don't know if we'll be next, but it's in a month at least.
Yeah. So thanks for tuning in, and until next time, you've been warned.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns. Boys.